Hi, this is David Orlowski, and welcome to the Rabbi Orlowski Show. Whether you're watching with our friends over at Torah Anytime, or wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, we're happy to have you along for this experience. This is going to be the long-awaited second half of the interview that I did with Nissen Black. And I got a tremendous amount of reaction from the first half. And I hope you enjoy the second half and the insights that are there that we've shared. I received a number of people made the same interesting comment, and that is, I've seen this in Black interviewed on other podcasts, but this seemed much more of a sharing as opposed to an interview. I appreciated that because, you know, I said at the beginning that I didn't look at Nissen as an entertainer. I looked at him as a mashpia. So I hope you enjoy this. And as a special observation, this is our fifth anniversary show. I always like to get a special guest for the anniversary show, and so I got one. So please enjoy. This is the end of 5 years of the Rabbi Orlowski Show. My gosh, what a long time. I don't do things for very long. And, you know, very few things do I have that I keep going for such a long period of time. And amidst Hashem and the schus of all the good people who watch and listen and get chizik from the show, we should continue for many years to come. And now the second half of my interview with Nissen Black. Bad enough that you're going to become an Orthodox Jew.
Right.
But you know you're going to become a Black Orthodox Jew in right. A almost entirely white community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to give second thought.
Yeah, of course. Then you think about, what's everybody going to think? Where we came from think? What are they going to? The whole thing is just like you didn't want to know. So Hashem arranged that Erev Shabbos, I was at a grocery store and I was doing like a self-checkout. And in between the beep, I'm telling you, with bright lights, it was like music played from heaven. And I could hear all the angels going, oh, and I heard, Shabbat Shalom, brother, you know? Yeah. And it was a Black Jew. And I said, of course. Come on. It's a Black Jew. And in Seattle, Yaakov Lennon was his name. Master Lennon, as we affectionately call him. And he had a karate outfit on, but I looked past it.
What are the odds?
So we talk, had a beautiful conversation. He invites us for Shabbos. Today we call him Uncle Yaakov. He was really, we went to him the next two Shabbosim.
And didn't he warn you off to being a Black in the Orthodox community? Like,
it comes with a lot of challenges. He definitely told us it was going to come with some challenges. Truth is, you know, coming from where I came from, I grew up in Seattle.
The Orthodox community comes with
challenges. He grew up on the East Coast, though. You're right.
That's true. This is more than challenges.
You're right. But the truth is, when you grow up on the East Coast, like he did, and from the South, I think he was originally from the South and grew up on the East Coast or whatever. Look, I always say people, I know people, I haven't been to the South so much. Been there a little bit. Haven't been to, you know, the heart of South Louisiana, where my wife is even from, stuff like that. So I don't know. But just from all the places I've been, like the most, like, racial tension I would say ever seen was like on the East Coast. Like, I mean, it's where the place is like the most racist place in the world. I mean, think about all the boroughs, your Black Harlem, Spanish Harlem. Nobody can even live in the same neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? So everybody's got stereotypes on the other person and whatever. The Jews are like this, the Blacks are like this, the Blacks. Like, you come from 98118 where I came from, like, it's the most diverse zip code in all of this. So we grew up, you know,
between the Hungarians and the Galicianos. Yeah.
So we.
You being a Galiciano? Yeah. I can handle you being Black, but not Galiciano.
Exactly. So we didn't. So for me, whenever I would hear growing up, Black people who came from the East, they said, like, talk about all the struggles, I always stop. Not by me. That's your world. Right. You know, that's not by me, but it's where he come from, a guy who watched his father killed by the Ku Klux Klan when he was a kid. I mean, you know, crazy story. He grew up seeing discrimination and different things like that. So he's 67, I think, Uncle Yaakov. You should interview him, by the way. But he's a crazy story. But so for him, I always thought, okay, yeah, I hear it. These struggles are not going to be my struggles. He's here in Eretz Israel. Yeah, Baruch Hashem, he's in Rehavia now. Thank God. We made Aliyah before him. You made it to Yiddishkeit first. I made it to Eretz Yisrael first.
You're so competitive.
Yeah, so competitive. At least, at one up. So Uncle Yaakov was a big anchor for us in bringing us into the community. The first two Shabbos and the other people we met started having us for Shabbos. They wanted to know. It's so interesting. So that was really the way we started rolling in. And right around the beginning of that time, I think maybe the second, third week or whatever, there was a Messianic Jewish conference. Now, at this point, we already have one foot out of the door, you know? And it came down to an argument. You know, that was like one of the last straws for me, was an argument that we had on Shavuos with some of the chevra there. We were staying up all night learning. and the argument that we had was that who has the real authority? Is it Chachamim or is it the apostles? Mm-hmm. Now most yeshiva bachim are not having this, and they're right. Not having machlokas over this, right? Yeah. So this was our argument, and we held, you know, me and my brother-in-law and a couple other people held that there was a chachamim, it wasn't the apostles. Whatever, we had our reasons for why. That was one of our arguments. That was like one of our last straws. And then they announced this conference is happening, it's coming to Seattle and whatever. And I remember being there for one of the meetings. We stepped in for somebody else, and they said, you know, whatever you do, no, there's going to be Orthodox rabbis who are going to come. You'll see them in the lobby, whatever. Don't talk to them. Don't say hello to them. Don't speak to them. Whatever you do, just fuck. That was like code of contact. Who are these Orthodox rabbis? One of them was Rabbi Michael Skobak from Toronto. He's an anti-missionary. Other one was Rabbi Eli Cohen, who's a Chabadsky, but he's also an anti-missionary. Works for Jews for Judaism, and so they. You know, them and other people like them.
The famous one, Tovia Singer.
Rabbi Tovia Singer. He doesn't go to the conferences. I had to talk to him. He should really attend some of these. Anyway, so what happens is that they in the lobby, and what they do is they try to engage Jews in conversation. They're very well versed in the New Testament, very well versed in Tanakh, and they are qualified to have these conversations. Now, so we decided it was a 4-day conference. We would go, but instead of going in, we're going to go sit with the rabbis and told us not to go talk to them, right? So, I mean, like now we can have real conversations, you know?
Right.
So that's what me and my brother-in-law did. We sat with Rabbi Skobak and Rabbi Eli Cohen. I think he was in Melbourne. I think he was in Toronto now. I don't know where he is. But so we sat with them 4 days, kept going back. And we just were radically changed by the conversations that we're having. A lot of the things that we didn't think about. Now, fortunately, but unfortunately, you know, they go with the intent to engage Jews in conversations at these. And what happens is they end up making a lot of gerim. So I don't know if they realize the mission is or whatever. Right. You know, there's a klal really in the Messianic world that wherever it's more like church, you find the most Jews there. Wherever it's the most frum, you find the most goyim there. That's just is what it is.
I taught nations to that, because you talk to three guys, uh-huh. The one who's most interested is the Christian.
Right, all the time, you know? It's a very interesting thing. But so after that, we go back. We don't end up associating with the Messianic congregation anymore. My wife is serious about this. I'm with her. We're on the same page. And we start, you know, looking. We go to for a few chagim, and then we end up moving into the neighborhood. It was just like that quick. I mean, in a matter of weeks, we were already found a place.
Which
moved
school
out.
You went to?
I was going to Sephardic Bikur Cholim in Seattle. Rabbi Ben Zaken, God bless him, he was became like a father.
And he wasn't surprised that this black family suddenly walks in.
He already had this other black Jew there. By the time we moved in, we definitely added to the pot. You know, there was my friend Nachshon. He was also black and Jewish over there. So it wasn't a lot for a small community. You know, there was a few.
It's a very small
black
area.
Yeah, there's a few
it's
black.
The only place where there's two Sephardic shuls. There's also the Turkish one.
Yeah. Turkish and Rhodes. That's where I was at the Turkish shul.
And the one from Rhodes.
And one from Rhodes, right? Ezi Bezi. Shout out to Ezi Bezi. And then there was the Ashkenazi shul. And at the Ashkenazi shul at the time, they were in the process of changing rabbis. I think that was one of the reasons why we didn't go there. Everybody told us to go to the Sephardim. They're much more warmer. Plus, they told me the berakas over there were much better. So I heard berakas. I didn't know what it was, but it sounded gishmas. And we ended up going over there.
the money went to the Turkish show.
That's what I'm saying. They had maracas. It was serious business over there. But it was a certain type of warmth. I guess it felt a little bit more culture than that. What's interesting about that was, like, we ended up going to Sephardi shul, and that's where we were. But I've always sort of been somewhat of a hybrid, because in the Sephardi families were very, very tight-knit. It was like a mafia. Yeah. It's very, our family, very warm for everything.
The Syrian community doesn't even allow gay rooms.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So by them, it wasn't a thing with them.
Sure, they have a big sign up. Like, all the,
really?
To connote or something, you know?
Yeah, of course. Let me know where it is. I want to go. Anyway, so what happened is that they, because everybody was so, you know, like my family only, not meaning they were very cordial, very nice and everything like that, but meaning not a lot of people invited us over. So we didn't learn a lot of the different Sephardi ways to do things, at least according to them. So, because not a lot of people had us over. And it wasn't on purpose. It was just like a cultural thing. That's what the culture happened. So who was having us over all the time? Ashkenazi families. So you can't imagine how confused we were about every single thing that we did. I'm learning Sephardi halacha. We don't do anything like this. We don't do anything like that, you know? So, and anyway, the other thing was that was very hard for us also too, is just being very transparent. It's like coming from where we came from, studying Tanakh and eschatology, everything, we were on fire for Hashem. You know what I mean? I was spending 8 hours a day learning. I was, you know, in order to find the truth, I was fasting 3 days at a time. I'd take a week. I would fast 3 days. I would go out crying to Hashem. Like, I was, like, we were coming in, like, fire, blazing. And everybody was just like, why are you guys taking this so serious? Don't understand.
The Orthodox
community. And just like, nobody could understand what we were so excited about. Why are you sure you want to become Jewish? Like, what's the whole, what, you know? Like, why would you do that?
Someone asked Mati Berger once, why we put so much money into the Kirov movement instead of into the regular Jewish community. He said, because you need someone who still believes in this.
That's good. That's very good. Very good. Oh, my goodness. I have Sipporim on that. But anyway, so that was a little discouraging, honestly. That was very discouraging for a lot of us. And that's really one of the biggest things that led me to Breslov, is because it had the book from
Rabbi Hirsch. Is there Breslov in Seattle?
There wasn't. But what happened was as we started getting more and more into the Breslov Sephorm, especially by the time I came across Hishtapchut HaNefesh, which was talked about Hibbul Dudud, that was when I knew I wasn't crazy. And once I see Rav Nachman talking about Hibbul Dudud in that type of way, I read it in Rav Arush's books already, Garden of Amunah, different things. These things were keeping us through, because, you know, it was that verse, everything we were seeing, that nobody thought we were, like, everybody thought our marbles were off. Like, we were so excited about Yiddishkeit, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, you guys are so excited. People would tell us, like, it's like, what were we supposed to do? Like, you know? That's what sort of kept us at bay. By the time I came across Rabbi Nachman Sephorim, and he was talking about just crying out to Hashem from that deep, like, that's how I found Yiddishkeit. That's how I got here, right? So for me, it was, like, the biggest relief. And I would say a living example of that fire that I saw was my Rebbe, Rabbi Brody, who was in Seattle at that time. And Rabbi Brody originally, I think, is from Silver Spring. He was teaching at one of the schools there. And over the time, he had eventually started his own, like, a breakaway minion. And then from that, it turned into a shul for Tikkuf over there, like a new Saksafard, more Hasidic style. And everybody that sort of, you know, dated that, davened over there, and fiery davening. I'm talking about
Your place.
Yeah, I found my place.
But he wasn't Breslov.
No, he had a big Breslov time, because he spent 4 years Chassidish. For sure, the only shrine more in 1,000-mile radius, for sure. But it wasn't about just the Lavush and all that. Like, people ask me, like, today, it's like Lavush. Like, I didn't get caught up on externals necessarily, because for me, be honest, you know, I wasn't so fond of the Hasidic dress. Like, nobody, I mean, come on, I came from the hood. Like, this is just having this fur on your head. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it just wasn't really something that I thought was geschmack. But what
Usher
made it for
went
me.
To Hasidus, he said, because I used to be a minister and I looked dressed in black and white anyway.
So I kept it with it. That's funny. But what I seen over there was that his passion and fire for Hashem was just,
you're lucky you found that, because there are a lot of places
I know
where you won't find any place like that.
I know. You don't understand how much I thank Hashem all the time that I had Rabbi Brody in my life, because me and my brother-in-law, we naturally gravitate. And it wasn't that everybody else is wrong, but I just, it's a difference when somebody's passionate about a shim, passionate about Yiddishkeit, and they're excited about it and all that. And we saw that by him, you know, and he exuded that in everything that he did, the way he would make a bracha, the way everything. He probably would not want me to talk him up so much like this, but to be honest, I didn't see it. He was already, he started pushing us to get up very early. I remember we used to get up very early in the morning. They come there, he was already in there talking to Shim, and he's booted this fresh out the mikvah and learning Torah in the dark, you know what I'm saying, with a candle, and just, I'm saying, by the time we start davening, what, you know, I would, my soul was ready to jump out of my body when he started davening, when we shake a lulav. Everything to him about Yiddishkeit was a big deal, you know what I mean? He wasn't a rambunctious person.
So they attached to families. You're going to families for Shabbos.
Yeah, we're going to families. And that was sort of what gave me my fire. And so then from there.
Are you still doing rap?
So yeah, I should have mentioned this. So even before we started the Garris, I retired. I thought I retired. Technically, I retired. I didn't get a pension or anything like that, but I definitely took some time off.
So what do you do now? So Amway? I mean, what are you supposed to do? How do you go from hip hop to the question?
So I started working in property management.
There you go. No wonder you became a Jew.
Yeah, I always reluctant to say that because I know what line is coming right after I say that. which wasn't even intentional itself. I started working at some, you know, apartment complex as a facility coordinator. The year I said that, you know, I was already, I didn't even make my mind up on the Gavis yet, but I wanted to be close to Shem, and I'm reading inside the Torah, you shouldn't work on Shabbos. So I didn't want to work on Shabbos anymore. And I was already ending my last, I had already came to a conclusion it was going to be my last rap album. And my conditions were that, you know, they could keep all of the money, everything that came from it. Only thing I want is nobody asked me to perform on Shabbat. I don't have to do anything. Like, I'm off on Shabbat, and I don't want anything from this. I was so, like, whatever. That year, working at the property management, from a facility corner, I got 4 raises that year. 4 raises. So somebody got fired, another person left, and they kept moving me up. They seen my customer service so good, so they started moving into leasing, and then I started moving my way up, and it was like, you know, it was very, very, very interesting. Like, totally not qualified for the job at all, by the way. It just wasn't my type of thing. But, you know, that's what happened. It just me just trying to do at the time what I thought was right. So that was my last album, and you know, fortunately or unfortunately, that was the one that blew up. Like, all the thing I was waiting for was that one record, you know, when MTV and BET was something, you know.
Really?
I was on rotation over there, full rotation. I was on college radio, the CMJ charts. I was like beating out people like Jay-Z and most, like, it was like a big thing. Like, they had closed.
So this was it. You were on the cusp of success.
I was on the cusp of success at my last album. I'm thinking. And I remember flying. I went to New York to play the CMJ festivals. CMJ, the College Music Journal.
I didn't ever think to yourself, like, this is it. I've worked all these years for this moment. And
no,
here it
gets worse. It gets worse. How bad it got. I remember going to play this festival, and I'm sitting over there with some of my favorite rappers that I grew up listening to and stuff like that. Some underground, some more mainstream. And I remember one guy, he was like tapping his girlfriend to like introduce me to D Black, introduce me there. And I'm like, man, I grew up listening to you want to introduce to me, you know what I mean? Like, having conversations with big people, and they all knew who I was. Like, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have to introduce myself. That was like crazy for me. And then to come back and be like, still, Hashem, I'd rather you.
Wow.
I'd rather you. I've been working so much up until that point.
So, that's Mesiris Nefesh.
Yeah, it was Mesiris Nefesh. It was. I forget about it sometimes.
I was always waiting for them to be discovered.
Yeah.
Entertainment. It never happened.
Listen, you made it to Torah anytime.
Yeah.
This is big stuff.
Yeah. I don't think I have so many clips on
Torah anytime. You know, I haven't even made it.
I love my Torah anytime. Anyway. So, all right. So now here you are in Seattle. You're on fire with God. You dragged along your wife's sister and her husband. You've just increased the Jewish black population by about 80%. Yeah. So now what happens?
So after that, you know, we went through, it took us about two and a half years for the whole Garris. We finished and we stayed there in the community, Baruch Hashem. We were there for about...
You got a good job now.
Yeah, well...
Property manager.
Well, something kind of happened over there with the property management. What happened was, to be honest with you, it just wasn't my cup of tea, really, no. Quite honestly. I love the people over there, so I really had separation anxiety. I would have never left, but I had a problem that my boss believed in my music more than I believed in it, even at that point. And she couldn't get it past her. She was just like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you not in your career? Like, at this point, I'm at work. And they're watching me on BET and MTV. And they're going why are you doing this? Like, no, I'm doing, you know. And
I'm finally living the dream.
Yeah,
property management.
Yeah, unfortunately, my position at the company was cut. I remember losing my job. And this all happened around the same time.
I was getting that letter.
Yeah, probably. Exactly. No, sweet people. But it's so funny. I had friends and family, my wife and other people around me were really pushing me, encouraging me to go back to music at this point now. This is already a year after this time now. And I'm like, there's no way in the world, you know. God bless Madis, but Madis had definitely had a change of heart. This is just all the same year, publicly.
Do you know him?
There were other. I do know Modest.
What happened?
I know him very, very well, but we're friendly. We're friendly.
You know what happened? Because he was like real stark.
I can't. Here's my honest opinion, right? So I can't speak. I haven't talked to him about it. I want to talk to him about it. The way I just haven't had the courage and the time really to really talk to him about it because I don't know how sensitive he is about it. Like I said, we're not that close. We're friendly, but I can imagine. Being in a, I would say, somewhat similar position of how much you're dedicated to use your gift, right? Because Manus also came from that world. He didn't come from a Froom world. He came from right. The world of reggae and everything. So he was really being true to himself and using his talent and trying to...
Yeah, he did the Hask concert and stuff like that. I mean, he was like very... He was getting mainstream Jewish.
Right, right. Also, too. So, but I think the thing is that still... We don't realize how much negative feedback really can affect you. It wasn't for every person, you know, you can have 20 people that love you and one person that hates you and it bothers you. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
You could be hearing all the time, oh, this, you shaggots, what are you doing? And your whole, everything I said. I think that over time, those things started affecting him and the people that were embracing him were less. Like even me, right? I'm more embraced by people who are less from than the people that are from, right? For multiple reasons. And so...
Part of it, they don't speak the language of hip-hop.
Yeah, so they don't speak the language, but it's no reason to... It's no reason to be ignorant of something or to touch a person a certain way just because you don't understand something. We see something we don't understand, so oh my goodness! Immediately, this is the run, and I think it gets us into a lot of trouble.
Israel is much worse than America when it comes to this.
I guess so.
A Sephardi came over to me once and said, "Do you know they have quotas for us in schools?"
Yeah,
I said, "Don't complain to me. I'm an American. They don't have quotas for us. They can just tell us no with no problem." It's worse to be an American. To be a smarty, because at least a smarty, you got a quota. Americans have nothing. But we're for
irony.
Sure an underclass.
Yeah.
You know, they look at Americans as like, you know, fat.
Yeah, of course.
So Americans, yeah, it takes a toll on you.
Yeah, of course.
But I can make Israeli jokes. So yeah, exactly. That's how I get back.
Exactly. So can I. Talk
there
about Uman.
Go.
I got jokes. Anyway, so, but because of that, and you're in that very, very unique position, and for him, I can only imagine it was a little bit, I would say even worse. I came in, I had my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, had my wife.
He had no family?
Madis got married after, from what I understand, after he was already, well-known, different things like that. I don't think he came in. He was single when he started, from what I understand. So there was already certain grounding things or whatever that probably didn't happen as much. I don't know how long he learned in yeshiva before the success came. I hear it was a small tikkun time from the success into that. And me already, I'd already retired and lived two lives. And I was a property manager, right? So there was already a little bit of a difference.
I'm an artist and a property manager.
Right. So I think that, you know, those were the differences. But I can only imagine, like I'm saying, being in that type of position. And in a lot of ways, he was in a higher position than me. He was still on a major label. I've been with major labels, but he like really had a success on a major label. And I know how that goes, you know?
What's he doing now? He's still performing?
He's still performing.
I got definitely still performing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're not playing him at so many bar mitzvahs these days. It's just not that ever happened. But he's still rocking.
But in the outside world,
he's still rocking. He's still doing this thing. But I could, like I said, when you see stuff like that, when that situation happened, it scared me.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? That made me feel further like, okay, it's right. Of course I'm right. I can't go back to music. And it wasn't the same time in that same year that Mott is what most people don't know. It was like something was in the air because there were other Jewish artists who were less known than Mott is that at least I knew, you know, who were in the world of contemporary type of music. And they all was like just calling it quits that year. Wow. So I was like, this is like, if there's any more proof that this is not what to do, right. Like, I don't know what this is, you know? And yet there was this push from people that were around me, even Rabaim that I talked to in Seattle and found out because I tried to keep what I did before a secret, you know? And they got out.
Listen, a black Jew walks into a show in Seattle. What do they think they thought that you did? You were either a drug dealer or a rap singer. What did they think? You know, oh, this guy must be an ophthalmologist.
It's true.
I hate to say people stereotype, but hey, you know.
It's the truth. People do stereotype. Yeah. So whatever, people found out. They're very awesome about it. And people encouraged me to like do my thing. And I was pushing away from it. And really I try to rely a lot on Rabbi Brody because I felt like he was somebody very strong.
That's an unbelievable character to meet. There are very few people like that.
And so he was very reluctant to tell me anything. He didn't want to go one way or whatever. He said, let's keep davening, yeah, you know? And so what happened was Hashem arranged that my eldest boy, at the time he's now my eldest boy, got sick with meningitis. He was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. And because I was a big chassid already, this form from Rav Arush, he talked about, you know, a person, if you're in a very hard situation, you need a big yeshua, you should daven to Hashem for 6 hours. You should pray. Wow. Whatever. So I really took this on, and I prayed. And I hit a certain place inside of my tefillah, and I start thinking about all these different people who were encouraging me. Like, because I wanted to know what was out of place. I lost my job. things are not going so geschmack. My son is sick. Like, we were going through a lot of times at this time, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to figure out, like, what's going on? And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking, there's no way. And then I thought about a dream I had when I was a kid. I'm telling you, like, crazy dream. Super vivid of me doing what I'm doing now. Quite honestly, I was 1,000% a Hashem guy. I was talking about Hashem one time. I saw myself on a screen, and I remember this dream in the middle of me praying. And I remember when I was a kid, I woke up. I was a teenager, 17 or so before Yiddishkeit. And I remember waking up from the dream. I was crying on the edge of my bed. I was like bawling, but I felt this major like. I'm telling you, when I had this dream, it was like unreal how much I felt Hashem was with me. Wow. And I was doing what I was doing, you know? And I was just having a conversation about Hashem, but I was a famous rapper. And I remember this dream in the midst of this six, and I all of a sudden I start thinking like, wow, maybe this was the Hashem thing. So I tested Hashem. I don't recommend this at home. I had a broken Rode mic. We're talking on a Rode microphone. It was an NT2 microphone that was up in my closet collecting dust that, you know, may have had a short. I don't know what the problem was, but it just didn't work. Anytime you plugged it up, it didn't work. And then it went on for a while like that from back when I was using it. And I davened. And afterwards, I plugged up the microphone. It worked. Maybe it just needed to sit for a while. But for me, that was a miracle.
It is a miracle.
And it not only did it work, it kept working. I recorded a whole album on it from that. But before, even after it worked, after I hooked it up, I remember afterwards, I was like so shocked. I went to, you know, my Rabbi Brody, and I went to talk to him about it. And he gave me like 2 hour, maybe lecture, Missy La Yishai Mamash. You know what I mean? It was very deep, like Musa and whatever. And he gave me bracha. And at the time, I was in touch also with Rabbi Laser Brody because I was so scared. I just kept checking with whoever I could, you know, that I felt like would be straight with me. And I remember I sent it like a sample song to Rabbi Laser Brody, who was at the time doing the English stuff for Rav Arush, and who I'd become very close with also, from Brody to Brody. And then he told me, like, you must do this. Like, it's not even a Shiloh. Like, to use your gift, you know how many people you could bring close to Shem. It's so encouraging. And I was just like, okay, So, you know, what do I do? And so I started, and I didn't know what, you don't understand. I didn't know that really there was even a such thing as Jewish music. Like, I was listening to Cantus.
It's not, so don't worry about it.
Okay, go ahead.
It died in 1982. I remember when I was there. When Mordechai Ben David put out Yidden, that was the end.
That was the end of it?
When they start playing a song and the girls give that primal scream, then yeah, you know that's not. Yeah,
it was over.
No one ever did that with Save. You know?
That's very good, very good, very good observation.
Yeah.
However, I didn't know what to do. I went back to the regular Goy Shechever that I knew, and all good people that I worked with before, and. And I was having no success.
You were going to do a Jewish album?
I didn't call it a Jewish album. I just called it positive. I wasn't really saying anything Jewish. I was talking about uplifting things and very positive album. And because I was still unclear about what to do.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like I had straight clarity. And what happened was everywhere that the PR team and everybody would go back to me later, just like, listen, be very honest with you, this album is just like way too positive. We have no ads, nobody lying on it. Like, this stuff is just too positive. Like, nobody.
You can't sing hip hop to Pat Boone songs.
Right. It was just like, you know, which it was so striking to me because my last album that I put out was also very positive. It was just very black. You understand what I'm saying? Like, sonically, was much more hood, much more that type of way, even though I was talking about positive things, but nobody really noticed because the beats were knocking, you know what I mean? So, but when I tried to go more alternative route, I tried to lighten up the music and different things like that, they just like, man, we just really don't know how to interpret it. I was like getting no bites. Do you know, understand from being like the top guy on all the blogs and everybody was talking about DJ Premier was running my, and I don't even know who he is, but he's one of the godfathers of hip hop, right? Sure. You know? So I had a lot of support from but there was just nothing.
I was lucky. I was never successful, so I never had to.
You never had to. Yeah, you know
that drop.
The drop. So that was like, you know, that was discouraging. So I thought maybe, you know, I made a mistake. You know, maybe it wasn't for me. I just didn't have any direction. So we go
through
a tough time.
What happened to that album?
The album's still around. People can still listen to it. It's called Nisim. It was self-titled Nisim. And I sprinkled in a few words here and there, but I wasn't really it definitely was, I wouldn't say like a Jewish album. I also too, I don't really consider my music like Jewish more than less than. I make music about Hashem. And so I try to make it universally enough to where anybody who wants Hashem can get down with it. So, anybody that doesn't, probably not shy for them, but. So after that album, we released it and got what we got back, which was nothing. I ended up going homeless with my family for about a year. It was literally a year. We had to be out on June 1st and because I didn't have work. And, you know, obviously the music thing wasn't going for me. We were homeless from June 1st to June 1st. So we ended up moving in to a place after I ended up working, you know, job for like a company that was... back then I didn't notice like a difference between being like woke and not being woke or whatever, but this place was like ultra woke. And plus it's Seattle. I mean, come on. It was like super duper, left in a lot of areas. And I didn't know the difference between left and right either. I just know I was butting heads with a lot of these, and a lot of stuff was around Israel, to be quite honest. You know, I remember during that tikkufa, we're having like debates, you know, Trayvon Martin gets killed, you know, and I'm somebody from the hood. And then the three boys get killed and kidnapped, you know, in Israel at the same time, you know, and we're sort of having different type of sympathies. And I'm supposed to be siding with this because, you know, so we were having like very heated arguments. I didn't know the difference between right and left. And I still don't know that much. But anyway, it was a very hostile environment for me to be in with my views on faith and different things like that. And it wasn't for everybody else. They were good people, just wasn't the same way. So I started working there. It was good enough for me to get into a new place or whatever, but I quickly left and started working for Kollel. Now, from a financial decision, that was a mistake. However, for a Ruchnius decision, it was very, very good for me. So I started working for the Kollel there in Seattle. And, you know, we're still trying to make everything. And during this time, a friend of mine reaches out to me and is like, hey, have you ever heard of this song, Shemelech? Now, I'm thinking to myself, of course, who hasn't heard of this song? Like, you know, what type of question is that? Everybody heard of the song. Now, still not knowing there's a Jewish, like, music industry, as you said, that doesn't exist. So I'm just like, yeah, I heard this song. He's like, would you do a remix for it? I said, yeah, okay. Shout out to Elon Cohen. That's what was it called me. And so he calls God Elbaz. He calls me back and he says, okay, we're going to do this song, whatever. And I'm thinking, like, to me, I'm going to make this record over there. But I was already at this point past having a music career. I'm working a regular job now. You know, I have, you know, a Gavaldica coffee and cake with Rabbi Brody afterwards over some Nesiva Shalom after davening. Like, my life is made for me right now. Like, the last thing I think about, like, is rebooting my rap career. I'm still doing music because I felt like I got that call. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. But I wasn't, like, so active. I didn't know what I was going to do. However, what happens is we end up doing this song. And before the song actually came out, it was maybe 5 to 6 months lapse before Shemelech actually came out, me and God's version. But I had already recorded it. So I was somewhere in London with the Nakuda Tova Chevra. And we started, they had like a kumzitz and they started singing it. So they all asked me to like rap because they knew I rap. So I already had something to Shemelech already. So it was like perfect. We didn't set up anything, but they just did it. So I started doing like, you know, my parts from Shemelech. And it like goes viral online before the song actually comes out, right? So then when we start crowdfunding for a video, everybody's like, yeah, I'm gonna see that video. So people funded the video like from crowdfunding. And we ended up putting out the video. And I'm telling you, by the time it came out, I'll tell you where I was. We were 2 months behind on my rent. I didn't know where my next dime was gonna come from or whatever. And I should have been more conscious and been more worried about it. But I just, something inside was, I was so sure that Hashem is going to take care of me. I had no idea what it was. And I knew that I needed to focus on my craft. When I came back from shooting Shemelech, and it had dawned on me and said, Hashem, this was it. This is what you were trying to show me. I'm supposed to be, I'm a you guy, right? So that's the biggest thing for me. And a lot of people teach me wrong, but they need to understand. For me, I was put here to be a Hashem guy. And everybody wants that because I have this great cross-cultural type thing where you're black, you're Jewish, you come from over here, whatever. Gevaldik, that's great. But I'm a Hashem guy. And I realized throughout my life, anything that doesn't have to do with Hashem, I have a very short gevul of how much I can entertain it. You understand what I'm saying? Even if I get excited about it, I have a very short gevul of how long I can give my energy to it because I start to feel like it's not tachlis for me, right? So if it starts to feel it's not my purpose. So for me, the moment I have a song called Hashem Elah, I'm like, wow, Hashem, I'm all in at this point. I'm really all in. I was already 3 months behind on my rent by the time this song comes out. I didn't know where my next dime was coming from. And I was literally in the forest of the upper loop of Seward Park. Everybody knows where it was. Every day, 22 days, I was 6 hours crying out to Hashem. And you know what I was davening on? That I should be mashpia to the people. That I should bring Hashem's light. This is what I was davening. I was spending the bulk of my davening. I spent a little bit of time on my rent. But I guaranteed you, not over here talking to Hashem. Even now, I have a tough time. I'm a breast lover, but I don't do all his advice. One thing I don't ask enough for is material things. I don't. Not because I don't. Really, it's just very hard for me. I really believe that if I can correct myself in my ruchnias, then Hashem will also handle my gashmias. So for me, sometimes I forget to mention my gashmias to Hashem. I don't think it's a good thing. I think I should more. But even back then,
says, I don't need money as long as I can buy whatever I want.
That's a good line. That's a very good line. Yeah. So as long as you become a schlepper, right? But yeah, for sure. But so that's what happened. Day 17 of me doing these tefillas, the song comes out and goes viral. Now, not only viral by Jews, it went by non-Jews also too.
Really?
It's number 3 on the world charts when it comes out. Yeah, people don't realize how big this song went. So it hit number 3 on the world charts, and it's like everywhere from all over the world, people were calling me. I was getting called for bar mitzvah, and I couldn't believe, like, this. All of a sudden, there's this Jewish music industry, and there's, like, you didn't even know. We're called the concerts, and I came to one of God's concerts. I remember there, and there was, like, thousands of people there, and I'm like, people like really got, like there's an industry of like Jewish music. Like people,
I didn't realize when you said you went to God, you meant God
Elbaz. Yeah, I usually make sure people know that I was talking about God Elbaz. You know, definitely not the same guy. Not the same guy. I love God.
So suddenly that's it. Now you're
so so that was the beginning of that journey. Now all throughout this, you talk about moving quickly. We moved to Eretz Yisrael maybe a month or so after this.
But aren't you flying around the country campaign now doing mitzvahs and weddings?
So, but once I got the call, I had a considerable amount of calls, and I went for it. We moved to Eretz Yisrael. So most of them came after I'd already was even making Aliyah. People were calling for months in advance. So I thought, okay, so listen, first few months we're in Israel. Well, Hashem, we have some work or whatever. I did not think, you know, 8 years later, I would still be doing it. We didn't have no idea. I'm talking about we moved to Eretz Yisrael. We didn't have an apartment. We didn't know where we were going to stay. Now, people would say I'm a sugar, and it's partly true, but I you understand.
I think we've more or less established that already.
We're established throughout the entire story.
I used to think Bali Juba were difficult, but Gayrim are impossible.
No doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, bro.
but it's so hard for me to explain, and I don't want to sound even crazier, but I'll be very, very honest. You know, one of the things that's always been hard for me to adjust to, and I'm not saying was rationality, right? To some degree, because on our way into Yiddishkeit, because we believed in Hashem so strong, we seen so many different Giluim. We saw Shiat Hashem like crazy. And there's makoros for this in the Sefarim. For sure, specifically, look to Halachot. Reb Nassim talks about what Hashem does for Gerim sometimes. And then talked a lot again. We shut up because we're coming to the communities. Everybody looks like we're crazy. But Hashem is so
alive. They
probably
picked up on the fact that you were a Ger, though.
Yeah. Oh, well. I wonder why.
Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Although if you buy the Smartim, you know, you can go either way.
A 1,000%. But because we were like at this fire, so for us, the Shims was so real to me that we were willing to move to Eretz Yisrael. By the time my wife moved, it was sight unseen. She'd never been to Eretz Yisrael. I had already been a year, you know, a few years before. A friend had brought me on just a try. For me, I said I was scouting, but for him, it was just to
see. And that was your first time in Eretz Yisrael.
And that was my first time in Eretz Yisrael. It was 2013.
Mind-blowing.
So then we moved at 2016, the beginning of that year. So 3 years later, we moved, and we didn't have an apartment. We told Nefesh Ben Nefesh a place we were looking at. Nefesh Ben Nefesh, but we didn't have one. We got a place after we moved here. In Rehavia.
But like when you came off the plane, where'd you go?
We went and met up with an agent and went looking for a place immediately.
But where'd you sleep that night?
That night we got a place. We took
that
a
night, right
that night. Hashem is with us, man. I'll tell you that if you believe in Hashem, Hashem will be there.
You gotta buy me a lottery ticket.
You gotta buy me a lottery ticket. I never thought of
you. You don't dive in for your God. So how about me?
I gotta be a Baal Petachah and buy a lottery ticket. Anyway, so but the truth is that, I mean, when we came, we got into a place, but Hashem, we're here. Can you imagine the amount of confusion that we had going on over here? Like, we just had no idea. We moved to Rehavia. Like, it was still a lot of Americans over there also, too. And then, you know, whatever. So we still didn't know where we're going. Then you go to Meir Shalom. The dynamics of all the different places we were, everybody had horror stories about school. So we didn't even try to put our kids in school for the first 6 months that we were here. The whole thing was just like, bulim, confusion. I was with one chevra of people that started... You know, the mashpi over there started going a different way. And it was just like, and now I'm touring. I'm traveling back and forth all the time also, too. It took me so long to get my Israeli passport.
Huh? God bless your wife.
God bless her. Yeah, you know? She was.
Because she's very left here with the kids.
She's left here.
In Israel.
Don't speak a lick of Hebrew. Doesn't mean nothing. But we were, you know, call us crazy or whatever. But Baruch Hashem, it led us to a place to where, it led us a very real and awesome, tangible relationship with Hashem because already we're Gerim, right? Already we look different like everybody else. So what does it matter to me that I'm going to do things a little different also too? If I try to do what you're doing, am I going to fit in later on? No, I'm not. So it doesn't matter, you know? I was cutting, I had to cut a friend's hair, Ori Yaakov, I remember. I was cutting his hair. And before I cut his hair, you know, somebody had told him, you know, he had dreadlocks. He was growing dreadlocks at one point, and somebody said to him, you know, why don't you just like, it's black, by the way. Jesus, like, cut your hair, man, so you could look like the rest of us. And he suddenly looked at me and said, if I cut my hair, I'm still not going to look like the rest of you. What you talking about? You know? So nothing you could do to fit in. You know, and as there's a very famous quote, you know, that it, when you were born to stand out, why try to fit in when you were born to stand out?
When my
you know?
Son was five.
Yeah.
So we had some people over from the Heritage House, and he had an earring.
Uh-huh.
And my son is staring at him. Uh-huh. And he whispers to me, he says, Abba, he's an Eved. That was the only context he had for somebody would have a ring in their ears.
That's too funny. Wow, wow, so, wow.
If I cut off my hair, then I'll fit in.
So, yeah. So that's my story, you know. All the way from Ashimelech to Love Me, my new song that's out. You know, I over the years,
so let's talk about music. So now, let's talk music. So now you're flying around.
Yeah.
And you, how many albums have you made now, those 8 years?
I didn't make a lot. I put out a lot of singles. I didn't make a lot of albums. But I think I put out, I think this is my fourth studio album now. Yeah.
What's your second hit after Ashimelech?
Second hit after Ashimelech was Million Years.
And then
Fly Away. I think those were the next biggest songs that I put out that I'm probably most known for, at least in the Jewish world. And the non-Jewish world, I'm probably most known for my Motherland Bounce song.
Right.
But I as much as people, I know they love that song, it's sort of like an illegitimate child of mine. It is. You know, like, that's one of the biggest, toughest parts about this is, like, you know, I haven't spoken so openly about this. I'm kind of giving you some jewels that nobody else is really going to get or haven't gotten up until this point. But I've been more open about it over the years because, you know.
Well, people know that I also don't fit in any place, so they're okay.
Really? It's all good. And I say this not in a way of wanting to fit in, but I just want to be honest with myself. Like, you know, I put out song Motherland Bounce. I was working with another label, and my inner core people who were around me in terms of my career had changed. And I don't think anybody had bad intentions, but one of the things that happens when you start to experience some type of success is that everybody has the best version of you for you. You understand what I mean?
Sure.
And
especially really when you're a performer, because you have handlers.
Exactly.
And they have an idea of
exactly
the brand.
And they can see you. Everything's busy with brand. What is your brand, right? And because I'm black and I'm from the hood, and people admire that so much for some reason, what happens is a lot of times is that people start to say, like, listen, Nisim, we want to see you like this. You know, and think about it. I was hosting Bachem at my house for many years. I was living in Meisharim for a couple of two and a half years. Every Friday night I was home, have 30, 40 Bachem, usually from Brisk, from the Mir, from, you know, from Selovetsch, Slumovitz. We're boys from all the Mitzuyanim, Yeshivas, whatever you want to call it. And these were the bulk of the boys that come. Every once in a while, the Aish boys will come or whatever. But for the most part, I had, you know,
Stark.
Super Stark. Stark. Yeah. And never without fail, there was at least a boy or two who want to make me feel comfortable, so they'll start talking like somebody from the hood, you know? Until they realize I'm not talking like that.
It's just
like,
you speak Yiddish?
I don't speak Yiddish. Not yet. My Yiddish is weak. I understand it quite a bit, though. I do understand Yiddish quite a bit.
I have these videos of these black guys who speak Yiddish.
You speak Yiddish?
They're beating me out because I don't speak Yiddish.
You speak Yiddish, right?
My parents only spoke it when they didn't want me to know what was
going
on.
I
got to
work on it. It's a little bit of a busha. So what happens is they try to make me feel comfortable. So what happens is what develops over time by people is like, listen, Nisim, I see you like this and I see you like that or
right.
whatever. So, you know, and it was perfect timing, I think, when I released the song, because my kids were being rejected from school because they were black, right?
Really?
Yeah. You say Israel over there, at least in America, sometimes they won't tell you, but in Israel, for sure, it's not it's not politically correct. I'm not being...
Listen, if they kick you, they didn't kick out you're black, it's just farting.
Right. Exactly. Imagine how many strikes I had against me. Oh, my goodness.
Smarty ready, that's too much.
I remember one time I went to one school and you know, the Hanhala, whatever, it's, you know, he have his kids come here. Look at if he comes here, make Shem Yerachim with his kids, expose our kids to and all this other stuff. Now, when I went there, all the girls were coming out going, oh, Nisim Black is here, Nisim Black is here. This is all the girls who are coming out saying that. my daughter, up until that point, had never even seen a clip of mine. She didn't know why people were stopping us and all this other stuff. And my kids were way less exposed. Even still to today, my daughter's having a complaint with me last night because she didn't know certain, ABCs by the rest of her friends. But for her, we didn't expose our kids to the same. My kids didn't know what basketball or football were until we moved to Ramat Beach Shemesh. For sure, they had no idea. So
Rabbi Sinclair used to tell his story. Uh-huh. And then he said he sensed at some point it was making his kids uncomfortable.
Really?
So he used to tell the story about somebody else.
So, instead of his story. That's telling his story. That's very good. Know? That's very good. So
it'll be harder for you.
It would be
a little bit. I knew this black guy.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know if anybody will buy it. I have to say this. So this was a deviation for me because I was having all of that. I remember I started this record and somebody who was a really good friend of mine was like really pushing me to finish that song. And I didn't want to finish the song because I started it like jokingly. You know what I mean? I was just freestyling one time and the lyrics were coming out, you know, like old school. And eventually, I was in the studio one time. I was recording on something else. And then he's like, no, it comes in. He's like, man, you got to finish that song. That song, you got to finish. So I ended up putting it out. And the truth is, the song comes out. It goes viral. And even when we had thought, I went to the non-Jewish world. Yeah, for sure. Even in the Jewish world, but for sure in the non-Jewish world, this song ends up becoming like super viral, right? To where like I was already part of a label, but every other record label started calling me in afterwards. I was by Universal, Warner, Republic. Everybody wanted it because everybody was hearing about this song. It was getting shared a lot. So anyway, some people took it way too serious, but even still, it was such a deviation from my usual thing, but you don't realize it until afterwards. You start going like, everybody pushed me because nobody had bad intentions, but this is how we want to see you. This is how we want to see you. And the truth is that all the time, if a person's not checking themselves, you will always be pushed in a direction that's not really you. If you're listening to other people tell you who you are, and it's not who you are. So for me today, and very, very much so, I don't care. I look at it as
the cuts.
Exactly.
If I am I, because you are you.
You are you. Right.
Avada. Should make a song about that.
I probably should. I did. I do have a song about it on the new album. On the new album, I do. It's called Someone Else. I do have a song about it. Someone Else, and I wrote it because of that tikkufa I had with Motherland Bounce. New album's called Glory.
Coming out in November.
And the reason why I have this song Someone Else was because of this tikkufa that I went through, and also how many boys I talked to who are bachurim, who everybody's struggling with. Who am I really? And I thought for sure, like Hashem, I'm done with these types. I don't have to go through these any things. I'm serving Hashem. I'm with my shmirs. And then all of a sudden you get hit and you with reality that, listen, if you're not 100% chazak to really stay focused on what your mission is in this world, somebody will give you a mission. You understand? Yeah. So you have to be focused on your mission. And my mission is bringing people close to Hashem. And I had my Yishmael. I hold Motherland Bounce. I still perform it for people because I know especially for the Bachim, they're really into gets the blood going. But every time, I try not to perform in most places just because for me, it's like, it's a Yishmael. It's not Yitzchak. It wasn't my Yitzchak. It was my Yishmael. You know, it was me trying to think, if I could be Makar of more people, everything. So I said, but me, my regular schedule programming is Hashem, you know, and openly and not side door talking about Hashem. I'm not trying to like talk it. If I don't say Hashem in the song, it's just because it didn't come out in the word, but you're definitely going to know what I'm talking about if you're listening to what I'm talking about. But consciously, being very, very open about my relationship with Hashem and trying to bring people close to Hashem is really what my music is all about.
So, Lechvod Sukkis, can we ask you to do one song? I mean,
You didn't put that on the question sheet. I didn't know you were going to do that.
You know, I don't have any accompaniment, but I think, if I'm correct, with hip-hop, you don't need that.
If I'm even hip-hop.
If it's Kobach, I at least need a guitar.
if I'm even hip-hop anymore.
I'm not going to be able to join in because I don't speak that.
Come on.
I listen to Al Jolson.
Got it.
Right. So everyone's waiting. They say, you know, gosh, I had Ari Goldwag sing. I had
Right. Okay, so we have to do something. So I guess one of my
otherwise
favorite
they'll accuse me of discrimination.
Of course, we don't want that. We definitely don't want that. So I'll say over, and I think maybe I say these words a cappella sometimes, because when the music's going, you don't always hear what a person says, especially with rap. It comes off very fast, and people complain that the rap's too fast. And whenever I say, listen to your Schlecht Zibor, whatever.
Well, anyway. Learn how to listen faster.
Learn how to listen faster.
Because
if you're not hearing me, for sure you're not hearing the Schlecht Zibor in the morning also. Right? So whatever.
Good.
So anyway, the hardest thing to deal with is to move without feelings. Seeing signs on all sides, but don't know what the real is. I don't know what your will is. Feeling my back's against the wall. I see all of my mistakes, and I desire to fix them all. But without you, it's impossible. And from my insides, I will call, but then it don't even ring. Because they all say how much you love me, so how could it be that you will let me destroy myself? I need saving from me. So when they write inside my book, use my tears as the ink, so they can testify on me, all I did to break free, just to glorify your name, because I gave back what you gave to me. I'm falling down, so can you lift me? There you go. Thank you. Shkoye, shkoye, shkoye. Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Hever, what's the best Nissan Black song?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Okay, so I'll take it. Flyway is really, really big, big song. I'm very, you know who loves the song the most? It's a big hit by the Hasidim.
Yeah.
They love Fly Away. I want to fly away.
So,
go to a place.
We'll do a Fly Away.
I want to fly away, far, far away. From this place where nobody can bring me down. When nobody can bring me down. And then my brother-in-law goes, that's it. So he was like an example demo thing, but we left it in the song. So So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, and, ladies and gentlemen, really this in it. Black.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme, no we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube and more. It's Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.